Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Mary and I'll be hosting today's forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences in Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite all students to go to our office next door or to visit our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is a working partnership with the Utah State Government. Today's guests are Bob Springmeier and John Springmeier. Bob Springmeier is a graduate of the University of Utah. He studied political science and economics, and he's the president of Bonneville Research. He just completed an analysis of the financial feasibility of the city of West Wendover acquiring and operating a propane and natural gas distribution company, and the financial feasibility of a Salt Lake Hispanic community organizing developing a community center. John Springmeier is also a graduate of the University of Utah, and he studied political science as well. He's the vice president of Bonneville Research and just completed an analysis of the Salt Lake City Central Business Improvement District and established an economic development area in West Valley City to facilitate the development of the largest warehouse distribution center in Utah. Over the past few years, Bonneville Research has helped Bountiful City, Brigham City, the city of West Jordan, Emory County, Lincoln City, Logan City, and others. Yeah. Please join me in welcoming our guests. Thank you.
I'm Bob. This is John. We're going to do a double team for you here. And the presentation that we're going to go through is the summary of a report that we did almost a year ago with the Utah State Department of Alcohol Beverage Control, typically known as the DABC. This is also a presentation that we made a week ago Tuesday, not quite a week, to Speaker Lockhart, the Speaker of the Utah State Legislature. So let's just jump right in. John's got the walking mic, and John's got the controller off of his iPhone, so let's just go. Who are you? How many of you are undergrads? How many of you are grads then? I thought it looked like 100%. Okay. Utah residents? How many of you are poli-sci majors? How many of you are looking to go to law school? How many are looking to do public administration? Come on.
I got one.
All right. How many of you evolved in the Greek system? Oh, that's disappointing. Okay.
On them, not you.
When we did this report a year ago, this was a fiscal policy and financial management orientation to it. We won't spend a lot of time on this, but let's just walk down the typical kind of objectives that we'd have on a fiscal policy or financial management project. Positioning for long-term financial stability, define policy guidelines for managers, establish clear and measurable objectives, provide for consistent financial management, improve bond rating and public confidence, and avoid setting policies in crisis. Plan ahead. Next. John, do you want to pick up this?
Yeah. I got to tell you, before I jump in, I had the oddest moment of deja vu this morning. Something about trying to race along an overcrowded Foothill Boulevard in the snow, worried about being late to Tim Chambliss's class, brought it back for me this morning. So... when we were hired by the Department of Alcohol and Beverage Control, we were asked to do what they called an enhanced business plan. These are some of the areas that we decided we'd focus on. In effect, what they asked us to do was maximize profits, come up with a plan to maximize profits, minimizing expenses, and then behind the scenes without increasing consumption. Good trick. So we looked at a number of different things, demand, price elasticity, customer service. We spent a lot of time looking at the cost-benefit analyses for what they call package stores versus their state stores, looking at analysis on leases versus bonding or building their own store, and then when to replace a store and when and if to close a store. At the time, you may remember there was a lot of conversation about the budget being cut. They were talking about maybe as many as 3 to 5 stores having to be closed, and that was causing a lot of turmoil in the media, at least. The alternatives we looked at, one was maintain the status quo, keep the present system that we're operating under with the current liquor store system, but try to improve the operations, try to minimize some of the waste in there. A shrink to grow, consolidate in order to expand, cut down some of the stores that are underperforming, you know, close 3 stores and replace them with 2 better stores, that type of concept. Or fragmentation, which is in order to expand using a different system, what they call their package agency stores, and we'll get into what exactly a package agency is in a couple of slides here. But expanding through a different channel than they've used in previously. We were asked to look at some specific areas, and we were also asked to not look at some specific areas. They did not want us to talk about privatization. That was not on the table. So turning all the state liquor stores over to Costco to run, that was, or someone like that, was not part of our scope. And they asked us to not look at examine the governance through the commission, how the liquor commission works. The DABC is set up a lot like any corporation with an executive committee, executive director, and a board of directors. But in this case, the board of directors is a governor-appointed liquor commission. Right now, it's 7 members. And that's expanded by 2. It used to be just a 5-member commission. Now we've got 7. They're the policymakers. They're the rulemakers. The executive is in charge of day-to-day operations. Some of the findings that we found during the course of our study, all the stores, when put to normalizing accounting, meaning not accounting according to state government, where your rent is over in division of facilities, construction, maintenance, and your employee staff is over in human relations, and you can move your money around. If you were a private business and all of your it was just the one bank account you were operating under, every single store made a turn to profit. Every liquor store in Utah makes money. On the average, the DABCs perform on or near norms on an average. But what we found is that it's kind of like maintaining an optimum body temperature while having one hand in the freezer and one in the oven. We've got massive extremes. We've got overperformers and underperformers that, when you look at it on an average, yeah, they look just fine. Looking at them individually, maybe not so much. The DABC was paying DFCM, and we're going to have a lot of acronyms in here because we're talking about state government. DFCM, Division of Facilities Construction Maintenance. They're the real estate arm of the state. They'll handle lease negotiation. They build the buildings. They manage all state-owned buildings. That's what they do. So when DABC wants a new liquor store, they effectively hire DFCM to build it for them or oversee the construction of it, the maintenance of it, the management throughout its ownership. What we found is that DFCM was fact, charging them more higher than market rates for their for providing these buildings. The DABC fixed costs of their expenses. We've got variable expenses and we've got fixed expenses. We'll look at a little bit more. Their fixed expenses that they, this is their, in effect, this is their mortgage, or in state term, this is their bond obligations or lease obligations. Whether they close a store, keep the store open, that's a cost that's going to keep, they've got that. They're legally obligated to maintain that or pay it off. It had increased 235% in 5 years. That the profits or contributions to the state general fund off of DABC were sensitive and highly dependent on an increase in sales. We've seen regular somewhere between 8 and 12% increases in sales year over year, every year for the past 14 years that we've been tracking, that we looked, which is great. And it's outside of industry norms. It's outside of national norms. However, when they have been and continue to bank on those increases, make decisions based on extraordinary increases. If those increases cease to, if they don't have those one year, 2 years in a row, we're going to be in big trouble. Oh, okay, and the compensation package for the packets agencies had an unrealistic upper limit and incentivized the volume sales of margin products. Let me explain what this is. So package agencies are private light for liquor stores. These are privately owned stores that are contract agents with the state of Utah, and they to sell alcoholic beverages.
There are two package agencies in Salt Lake County. One is in Midvale. It's on Old Main Street in Old Midvale. The other one is at Snowbird, and it's in the General Grits grocery store, deli, and it's just off to the side there. There's a separate door that takes you into it.
Those are two of the retail. If you go to one of the downtown hotels, and they've got, and you can, if you're purchasing liquor out of anywhere other than one of the bars or restaurants, if you call that, if you're staying at a hotel and you call down and want a bottle of wine for room service, that's a type of package agency that they have to have in order to sell that to you. If you want a glass of wine, that's an entirely different type of package agency, but they have to have that one too, and that we get a little complicated. So in effect, what it is, me, I'm private business guy. I want to run a liquor store. I contract with the state. They give me a license. I'm now a contract agent of the state of Utah. I have my own lease. I have my own employees. I have my own store. I sell state products. I buy it at retail from the state of Utah, and I sell it at retail to you. I'm not allowed to make any money, any margin off of the sale of the alcoholic products. I'm then compensated by the state of Utah based on how many units I sell. If I sell 1,000 bottles in a month, I'm compensated X. If I sell 5,000, I'm compensated Y. Here's where it gets funky. There's a max. So if I can't make more than $10,000 a month, argument for lack of a better argument, we'll throw a number out. So there's a max there. For someone that isn't a mom and pop shop, it would be harder to get into this business because you've got a top end Mac you can make. If I can only make, most of these package agencies are pulling in the top end. They're bringing in $120,000-$140,000 a year. Well, that's pretty good money. Except they've got to pay their lease, they've got to pay insurance, they've got to cover all employee costs, and they've got to try to pay themselves out of $120,000 a year. That gets a little thin. Most corporations, most companies, most businesses aren't interested in getting into that end. The other part that's backwards is they're compensating us by by the volume that we put out. Every logic in Utah says we want to do, the government wants to do things to limit the amount of the consumption of alcohol. It's just the way we've operated, and not necessarily a bad policy. This does the opposite. I'm now incentivized not by how much the dollar amount that I sell, but the volume I sell. So if I sell 6 cans of, crappy high-end or high alcohol ice house beer, I get the same compensation as an operator as I would if I sold 6 $200 bottles of wine. So a little counterintuitive there. A couple more quick findings. That the DABC could have achieved more flexibility by leasing their stores rather than buying and bonding on the stores. This is also a little counterintuitive and surprised us when we started studying this. States don't pay taxes. State of Utah doesn't pay taxes. They don't pay property taxes. We as private citizens, private business owners, have to pay property taxes, and those are factored into a lease rate. So how could a lease be cheaper? Because their bond costs, the cost of building these buildings are that much higher, and they're now locked into those buildings for 15, 20 years as opposed to a 5-year lease that allows them to move with the changes in retail industry and market. And finally, that the DABC stores should be, we should be evaluating them to look at remodeling or replacing those stores every 10 to 15 years, just as other retail stores are. When we met with DFCM, they said, we build our stores as 50-year stores. These are 50-year products. We said, that's great. Good for you. That building will be standing in 50 years, and you should be proud of that, and you can tell your kids. Unfortunately, retail has a shelf life, an effective life, of no more than 15 to 20 years. Big box building has a lifespan of about 15 years. The construction will last longer than that, but things change. The industry is changing. Retail is changing. 15 years ago, we would have never thought we'd see a Winco-type grocery store, an 95,000 square foot grocery store out off of Bangor Highway. That was inconceivable, as was the 10,000 square foot grocery store, the old Emigration Market on 13th South and 17th East. Those are the extremes. But the industry changes, and the buildings and the market has to adjust accordingly. 50-year buildings don't do that. Some of the recommendations that we made were closing a couple of stores. We suggested that we close the store in Murray. We close the store in South Salt Lake. Murray store is about 50th South and State Street. It's right where the... It's in the shadow of the Intermountain Medical Center, there on the west side of State Street.
Right next to what used to be a strip club.
Yeah. And it's the only building right along in that section that isn't owned by IHC. IHC has some plans there, and this is the one, this appears to be the one holdout. And then the South Salt Lake store. This is a store that... Y'all know where Kirkham's is on State Street. Directly across the street, there's another called Recreation Outlet. Okay, just south of Recreation Outlet, there's a little side street, little residential street. And on that little residential street is a 2,300 or 2,700 square foot liquor store. It's just this tiny little thing out of the way. We worked for South Salt Lake and didn't know it was there. And it was astonishing to find this liquor store. Most people have no idea that it's even there. We suggested you close those two stores, replace them with one better store, one better located, better able to serve both of those markets, with the cost savings, being able to sell the land and the Murray store, sell the property and the Murray store. We figured we could get almost a $2 million savings to the state. That includes the cost of building a new store to replace them. And again, that closing any of the stores, and this was our tip to the legislature, that immediate closure of any of the stores without replacing of those stores, just flat out closing, could severely jeopardize that we talked about earlier, that delicate balance of counting on a 10% annual increase in sales. Without, they were gambling on the fact, and are still gambling to some effect, that because liquor stores are a controlled market, we don't have a choice. If we're shoppers if we want to buy a bottle of wine in Utah, we have only one choice. We go to one of the state stores to buy it. You can't say, well, Dan's doesn't have what I want, I'm going to go over to Smith's. We got one shot. That's it. So their thought is, if we close this store on Foothill Boulevard, then they'll just go to the one on 33rd South, or they'll go to the one in Sugar House. They'll just go to the next closest store because they have no choice. It's the only thing they've got. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe that's too inconvenient. Maybe we choose not to. Maybe they just decide to go to the grocery store and get a 12-pack of beer instead. Yes. Of course, sure.
Are you closing specifically or recommending closing stores that are specifically being underachieved, like that they're not performing well?
That was part of what we were asked to provide as a matrix on what those parameters for closing a store would be. Performance was certainly one of them. Proximity to other stores, or you know. And again, we never recommended saying, okay, this store, and this store, we should close them. They're not working. What we said was, like this, you know, the Murray and South Salt Lake, let's take two stores, close them both, but we're going to replace them with one. Yes, we're going to have a net loss of one store, but we're going to actually improve.
You remember one of the findings was that all stores make money. So the normal definition of underperforming really didn't hold.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one of the stores that we recommend closing is the Murray store, and you could argue that, and we'll see some further examples in some of the later slides, that's an overperforming store.
Yeah.
Its retail sales per square foot are too high, and yet it's landlocked, it can't expand. So the typical way of dealing with that challenge then would be to build a larger store somewhere else. So we recommended the consolidation of the two stores that are both landlocked, can't expand. They're both poorly located, into one store that may be better located and could better serve the public.
This one we thought was interesting. The employee turnover rate in 2011. Mind you, 2011, we are in a bad job market in 2011. People that have a job are not they're not quitting their job. They're holding on to it and doing what they need to do in order to keep that job. They had a 50% turnover rate in 2011 on their temporary part-time employees. The people that work at the liquor stores that are stocking the shelves, you know, working the cash registers. 2007, when we had a much better market for a much better job market, it was 70%. They were losing 7 out of every 10 employees during the course of a year. Just the training alone, just the state mandated training for new hire employees was costing us, the taxpayers, $226,000 a year just to replace those. And that's the 50%. 70% was obviously much higher than that.
Do any of you work in retail? How would you like to have Sundays off?
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday. How would you like to have the Christmas holidays off?
How about every holiday? About 14 state holidays every Sunday, you're not getting paid for those. You're an hourly rate employee, but you know you're never going to have to work another Black Friday in your life.
So I'm just wondering if this training is more rigorous or, you know, like why is this having such a big impact on employees in the state?
If the training itself is more rigorous?
Does the state have regulation or anything on
mean, the state's got some mandatory training. They've got, you know, my guess is if you were working for the Gap, you're going to have some, you know, some mandatory training. You're going to have some, you know, some, you're going to have some customer service training. You're going to have some.
If you work for the Gap, you're not going to have undercover people coming in and trying to buy hot pants.
That's true.
And then busting you for doing
that.
So
that is also true. Yes, they're not going to be sending 19-year-olds trying to trick you. And that's part of it too. You're dealing with this. We're dealing with a product that, if intentionally sold illegally out of, is a felony. If I knowingly sell an underage person a bottle or steal it, if I give one out the door to my friend, that's a felony. So we're dealing with a little bit different product. So that's part of it. Part of it is that's what governments do. We overtrain and we, you know, it's part of the bureaucracy. So governance, couple of quick things with the Liquor Commission. Liquor Commission spends almost all of its time hearing pleas and requests for business licenses. New restaurant opening up in the valley. We want to be able to serve wine. We want to have a full bar. We want to be able to serve beer, whatever it is. And it's a steady parade of, in most part, terrified new business owners who are throwing themselves at the mercy of this Liquor Commission, hoping they get the lucky number or the lucky draw, or they're wearing their lucky sweater or whatever it is, and they're going to get one of the licenses that's available that day. That's what the Liquor Commission does for 4.5 of the 5 hours that they meet once a month. About 10 minutes of what they do is look at in issues surrounding the liquor stores. Also determined that there was a significant lack of retail experience on the Liquor Commission or within the DABC. They were looking at it as a state agency and something that should be controlled, and still do, as opposed to a $320 million annual retail business, which is what it is. Okay, let's give a little background here. Right now, current state system, state of Utah has 42 state-owned liquor stores. These are the normal stores that we're used to seeing on a daily basis. Foothill store, the wine store on 3rd East, Sugar House. We've got two club stores, one in Park City and one in Salt Lake down near the warehouse. These are where the restaurants and bars can buy their product. One of the strange things that is also counterintuitive, if you own a bar in downtown Salt Lake, you have to buy your liquor from the liquor stores just like we do, just like any other customer, just like everyone else. You can get it at the club store, but you're paying the same price. They are buying at retail.
Restaurants as well. So if you buy a bottle of wine at a restaurant, they paid exactly the same as you would if you went in to the liquor store to buy that bottle of wine. So that's the reason that you pay a markup. You pay more for that bottle in the restaurant because they've got the cost of acquiring it and then serving it, putting out the glass.
We've also got 67 of those package agencies that we talked to, 42 of which are type 2 or type 3. We don't need to get into the details of that, but basically those are general retail. If you walk into the general store in Springdale, Utah, just past the whole wheat breads and all their grains and whatnot, it's the liquor store. It's a really strange thing. There's no wall. There's no gate. There's no guard. It's just right there. That's package agency. We're just not used to seeing them here. Let's look at some of the numbers. Now, keep in mind, we did this study. This study was completed and presented a little over a year ago. At the time we did this, we started pulling the data. The only full complete year for both expenditures and revenues was 2010. So that's what we had to operate on. Net sales in 2010 for liquor stores was $260 million. The cost of goods served, COGS, cost of goods sold, was 51% of that, leaving a gross margin of 49%.
You understand, cost of goods. That's what they pay to buy the product from the distributors themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's their cost of buying the wine or the beer and the alcohol.
Variable expenses, employee costs, utilities, things that if you're not operating can be eliminated or decreased, were made up only 5%. Fixed costs, at the time, were only 2%. Fixed are your bond payments. That's your rent, your mortgage, whatever it is. The state pays sales tax. The liquor stores pay sales tax. They pay them to the city, the county, and the state, all that get a piece of the sales tax. They pay those just as in any other retailers
and the state
would. Yeah. They also pay a mandatory 10% of all sales goes to the state school lunch program. So that's that $25.9 million. So their profit in 2010, after all expenses, was over $68 million. If you factor in the sales tax and the school lunch, and think of it not as profit but as revenues back to the state or the county or the city, back to the governments, we add those up and we're in the $110 million range annually.
This is big business.
So like 2000, this is a little update here. So in 2010, it was about $260 million. 2011, that jumped to $294 million. This is total sales. And 2012, it was $320 million. We're still on that climb that we were talking about earlier.
And don't ask us why. We don't know whether people are drinking more or whether there are more people drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or buying more. Or drinking less, but drinking better? I don't know.
Or buying less of the 3-2 beer at the grocery store or convenience store,
yeah,
and buying more of the craft beers at the liquor store.
Blame it on Epic.
We haven't been able to track that detail, but this is not what's happening nationwide also.
Some of the top-performing stores, looking at the stores individually, the number one ranked store on 70th South and about 20th East over in Cottonwood Heights in 2010 did $4.5 million profit, made a profit of $4.5 million in the year. This store, interestingly enough, was closed for reconstruction, remodel. They shut down their number one store for 6 months to add 5,000 square feet of warehouse space at retail lease rate prices. We got into some tumultuous times with the change of leadership and new within the DABC. New people came in. When we started making our final reports and said, "Hello, people, your number one store is shut down. It is October 15th. We are now 5 weeks away from the start of the biggest season in any retail, and liquor stores being no different. Retail makes their money between Thanksgiving and Christmas. That's what it is. If general retail could make as much as 35, 40% of their annual revenues in that period of time. Liquor stores were about 32% of their annual revenues in that 5 to 6 week period of time.
Yeah, the only difference is the
store is closed.
They've got January. They don't shut down at Christmas. They still have New Year's.
Yes, right. Yes, you're right. So this is their number one store, by the way. It did get open, sort of. I went there myself just to see the day before Thanksgiving because it would be closed on Thanksgiving. And I had this walk around a guy standing on a ladder in the entryway who was actually installing the light fixture. He was doing more than just putting the bulb in. He was wiring the fixture, but they were open for business.
Yeah,
Not sure they were doing it. They were doing it at a $4.5 million clip with construction trucks taking up most of the parking lot. But
Let me step on you for a second, John. A number of you raised your hand saying you were involved in retail. Is half of your store dedicated to storage? No. Next time you're in and around a liquor store, and you can go in, the bishop isn't going to... look through...
Just go to the other side.
Look through the shelves. You know, the shelves are all open at the back because they're back-loaded. So look through the shelf, and you'll see that half of the square footage of that retail store is dedicated to storage. It's dedicated to warehousing. So they're paying half of retail rates square footages for storage. Now, this particular store, the Cottonwood Heights store, highest producing store, closed down for 5 months, is at worst 20 minutes away from their major warehouse. Thanks, John.
Yeah, thank you. And that may make, you know, that concept of having storage may make sense if you've got if you're running a store in Price, where it's a lot harder to get your, you know, get the product. But the distribution warehouse is on 17th South and 9th West. And they shut down. They built 5,000 square feet of new space, not one of which a single customer will ever step in. It's all warehouse space. Anyway, Sandy, Park City, the Sugar House store, and the downtown the 4th South and 2nd West store. Those are the top five stores in 2010 by measure of net profit. The five worst, in order, the Sweet Alley store in Park City was the lowest producing store. This is a tiny little store. Sweet Alley is just that. It's an alley off of Main Street, Park City. This is a walk-up store. This is one that's there to facilitate the Sundance and the skiers and their tourist-based if anyone's tried to drive and park on Main Street, Park City lately, you realize what a futile effort that is. This is a walk-up little kind of store. So it's also heavily subsidized to the state by the city by Park City in order to have it there. They want it there so much they're willing to pay most of its rent just to have them there.
But even this store makes almost a quarter
even
million bucks.
Even this store, the worst store in a bad location, no parking, made a profit of $232,000. That's after all employee costs, too. That's a good gig. They want to sell that store, sign me up. Package agencies. Looks like we got a little bit off on our formatting here. The number one package agency at the time was the American Fork store. It did a net profit of $411,000 in 2010. This store was closed in order to make way for the new state store in Pleasant Grove. The owner of this package agency may have had 90 days notice. May have had 90 days notice prior to closing of this store and the termination of his contract agreement. No franchise, no long-term contracts, and nothing that prevented the state from building a store right next to him, closing him or not. One of the other problems with the package agency system that we'll talk about if we get time here. So the top five package agencies all did a profit of between $411,000 and $215,000 a year. Now, it's a far cry from the $4.5 million on the state stores, but keep in mind, these are smaller, these are non-rural, these are rural, non-suburban, urban, and off-the-beaten-path stores. This is what they're designed to do.
These are little mom-and-pops, but remember, this is state profit, not their profit.
Right.
This is what the state profits from them.
One of the metrics that most retail will use is a sales per square foot. How much are you selling out of your space? That's a pretty good metric. To give you some examples, and these numbers may be a little bit dated, but about a year ago, the Apple stores were, as a chain, were the highest performing on a sales by square foot basis of any retail chain in the world. They were doing over $8,000 a square foot. It's unheard of. grocery stores would be hopeful to do $250, $300 a square foot. That's maybe $400 a square foot for a grocery store. That's pretty normal. The number one liquor store on its sales per square foot is the Sugar House store. It was doing over $1,600 a square foot. If I'm the regional sales manager for Panda Express and I've got a store that's doing 3.5 times what is the norm, I'm doing one of maybe two things, if not both. I'm either expanding the size of this store to allow for more customers, or I'm dropping another store just down the street or within its market area, because this is too much. Now I'm actually losing customers, because those kind of numbers mean we've got lines, we've got heavy delays, our customer service is down, we are now getting a diminished return off of our number one store. Government doesn't necessarily work, think, and operate like that. But
yeah, this isn't an Apple store where the average ticket is $1,600.
And is that size. It's the average ticket is $11, and it's, you know, it's average of all this of all the state stores was $855 a square foot, and the lowest was in Tooele at $340. Remember, I was talking about hand in the furnace or hand in the oven and hand in the freezer to hit the average. There's a good example. From $1,600 a square foot to $340 a square foot, if you look at the average, $855, that's good. That's good average. Well, almost double what Pennsylvania's average is. We use Pennsylvania, even though their population is, you know, far exceeds us, their system there of selling and distributing alcohol is actually pretty similar to ours, if not a little bit more backwards.
They're the only other state. So Utah and Pennsylvania are the only two states in the country that control everything.
Retail, distribution.
Warehouse, distribution, and retail.
Yep.
They're the only two. Pennsylvania is well down the road of changing that. So Utah could well be the only one.
Has anybody ever been to Pennsylvania? Have you ever tried to buy beer in Pennsylvania? You either have to go to a bar or you have to go to a beer distribution center. Yes, you cannot buy, even Utah 3-2 beer, you cannot go to the grocery store, you cannot go down to your local 7-Eleven and buy beer. You go to a bar and you pay bar rates and you can carry it out. You buy a six-pack in a bar and you can carry it out, but you're paying bar rates for the beers. Or you can go to a beer distribution center and you can buy them there. Here's the catch with the distribution center. They will not sell you anything less than a 24-pack. So you can buy a party ball and put it in your car and drive home. You can buy it cold, but you can't buy a six-pack in the state of Pennsylvania unless you go to a bar. So next time you're seeing Utah and you think, man, we have just lost it. Well, we have, but we may not be the only ones. The largest stores in terms of total square footage. Five largest stores in Utah: Bountiful, Cedar City, Draper, Pleasant Grove, and Holiday. Anyone think that sounds a little funny? That the largest liquor store in the entire state of Utah is in Bountiful. Lots of partiers in Bountiful. Lots of big drinkers. Lots of bars. Lots of clubs. And when I was in college, Bountiful is where we went on a Friday night. That was it, right? No. 14,000 square foot store and it's brand new. They just did this. This was not a 15 year ago mistake. This is a brand new store.
I dare you to find it.
Yeah, that's the other. It's hidden. They built themselves a Deer Valley-esque Taj Mahal, and they hit it. Look it up. Take a look. Smallest stores. Sweet Alley store that we were talking about in Park City, 2,500 square feet. The Miller Ave store, the little South Salt Lake store that we talked about that we should, on the little residential street, 2,700 square feet. That's a small little store. And then when you realize that at least half of that square footage is being used to store the product, warehouse space. Now we're talking about 1,000 to 1,200 square feet of actual retail space. That's smaller than the room we're in right now. Price, Brigham, and Vernal. Those are the five, round out the top
now,
five.
Notice how similar the square footages are there on the Price, Brigham City, and Vernal.
Mm-hmm.
That was a prototype that they had almost 25, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. One of the other metrics that retail will often use is inventory turn. How often, how long a product will turn over, will sell on the shelves. In fact, before you have to pay for it, but during the course of a 12-month period, how often will you sell this product out over?
How long does it sit on the shelf
before
it gets sold?
We use it as a way of measuring how dialed in are these stores. These stores, every store is not going to carry the exact same product. Each Banana Republic is not going to carry the same product because where they are, the demographics of their neighborhood is going to be different. So they're going to customize it, you know, accordingly. Liquor stores should be doing the same thing. The Park City store should probably not be carrying the same product that the Vernal store is, for example. We've just got different demographics shopping there. How dialed in are they? How quick are those products moving out? Taylorsville's really is really dialed in. It's working quite nicely for them, and Murray as well. Average at 9-10. The wine stores are the bottom, and again, Furnace and Freezer in order to hit the average here. The wine stores are the lowest performing as far as turnover goes. When John Huntsman was governor, he wanted to be able to tell his friends at his Western Governors Association and other governor meetings that Utah had as good a selection of high quality wines as any state in the nation. Come in, I dare you, I challenge you. Come shop our wines. And in fact, two things. One, he was right because he made it happen. And two, our high-end wines, our real expensive wines, were cheaper than in neighboring states. Also counterintuitive. Our inexpensive wines were higher. Retail people. If you've got a product that costs you $10, your markup, and you've got a product that costs you $250, where do you have more room in your margin, in your markup? I'm sorry? You've got some room in your $10 one, but if you've got a $250 markup, you can have a little bit higher margin in there, and before you're going to shock and overwhelm your customer. That's the theory. Jewelry's got a markup that's out of this world because it's already high, as opposed to, you know, grocery items that are pretty low markup. We use the same standard minimum markup for all the liquor products. So whether it's a $5 bottle of Boone's Farm, or whether it's the highest, you know, dollar bottle of wine in the store, markup is the same amount. What that means is that high end stuff is cheaper here than it is in California. What it meant to the turn is that we are stocking our shelves with some really high end wines at these wine stores. Go down to the stores, take a look. You can see in the locked cabinets, they have bottles of wine sitting on the shelves at retail price over $2,000. They have several of them. $2,000, $2,500, they're sitting there. Now, anyone that knows those that know wine or like wine, or those that, you know, ask people that know and like wine.
Especially those that are in the $2,000 bottle.
There's a reason that people that buy those levels of wine have wine cellars, because they're kept at a humidity-controlled area, a heat-controlled area, and a light-controlled area. They can control. This is in a retail store, with the heat going up and down as the temperatures, with suns changing coming in. These are now a depreciating asset. We want to talk about them as what they are. This is a state-owned asset, and it's now depreciating. We got a $2,000 bottle of wine that once it leaves the warehouse in that controlled environment, the quality of that wine is going down. And those that know about wine will know the more dust that's sitting on that wine, the less likely I am to buy it because it's not in a controlled environment. We talked a little bit about DFCM and the bonding and building. So when we all know what we're talking about with bonding. Bonding is government's way of taking out a mortgage. It's their way of borrowing money. Governments get bonds. Private people get mortgages. The last five stores that were built in the liquor store were all built on one bond. So we were unable to determine which break out this cost for each store because the accounting was done as a lump sum with those five stores. We can tell you that the cost per square foot of those stores, $31.83. Even if you take a net present value of that over 20 years, it's $22.62. I challenged you to go to Cedar City, Hurricane, Heber, Pleasant Grove, and Springville. See if you cannot lease or rent space, retail space, 10 to 15,000 square feet in one of those five markets for less than $22.50 a foot. That's downtown Salt Lake rates. $22.50 a foot, you can get it probably anywhere outside of City Creek you could get for $22.50 a foot, let alone in Hurricane or Heber, where Main Street rates are probably more like $12 a foot. But they're paying $22. No, I should say they should. I should say we are paying $22 because this is taxpayers. So Holiday, same thing. The Holiday liquor store. Has anyone ever seen the Holiday liquor store? Anyone know where that is? It's gorgeous, isn't it? It's beautiful. Walking in the store is great. I can't figure out what that really large entryway is when you walk in. The only thing that they keep in there is a bag of salt and a shovel. It's like 22 feet high and 10 by 10. Not really sure what that is, but it's a nice architectural feature. That's the most expensive store the state's ever built, and it's not even close. It was not even close. Now, part of that is the city of Holiday demanded it. They demanded that they build a nice store because it was going to be across the street from, hopefully, one day, what will be their Cottonwood Mall Part Deux. But they didn't want a typical, 1978 block, ugly liquor store sitting on their main intersection in the city of Holiday. So they pushed them to do more. Well, they pushed pretty well, and the state gave pretty well, and the architects probably won in the end because they built the most expensive store that the state's ever seen. And it's even at net present value, it's $23.10. Again, you can lease space in Holiday for less than $23.10 a square foot. Bountiful store, again, we talked about that. $11.50, that's probably more in line for Bountiful, even in a hidden store. Your lease costs. The state has six stores that they have currently under lease that they don't own. The Park City store, they pay $4.15 a square foot. Now, as we said before, Park City subsidizes this. They're not paying $4.15. That's Main Street Park City may be the only place outside of City Creek that may be more money than City Creek. $4.15 doesn't get you there. Park City, the Municipal Corporation of Park City, wants them that much that they're willing to subsidize the rent to keep that little store there. But $15.80, $16 a square foot at Sugar House, Foothills $18.58, the Avenues $25.16. And the number one store that closed was paying $19.69. None of those, except for maybe the Avenue store, is out of market. The Avenue store is probably a little high, but finding 8,000 square feet of retail space in the Avenues is a little bit of a challenge too. So they've got a little bit unique, but nothing there is too crazy. We've also got five stores where they have no debt. They paid their bonds off. They own them outright. Price, the Murray store that we talked about, which is why that was one of the ones that we suggested closing, not just because of its location, but also because it's debt-free. They own it outright, and the value and the dirt is probably the highest and best use of that land is likely no longer a liquor store. Ogden, Vernal, and St. George. We talked about the bond obligations going up 235% in 5 years. These are the numbers. In fiscal year 2008, the bond obligations were $2.9, almost $3 million. In 2012, it's 10. That's the new stores.
5 minutes.
5 minutes, got it, okay. Do we have questions? Would you like to take the 5 minutes on questions?
It should say we actually have 20 minutes after the
got it. Okay, let's push through the five, and then we'll get the questions after that if we can. We looked at some drive time market analysis of the stores by county. The little red clusters you see are a drive time radius off of each store. The darker the area up near the top there, the more overlap you've got, the more markets we're overlapping here. So Salt Lake County.
So these are market areas.
Yes. Salt Lake County's got 19 of the 42 stores, or 44%, and they're doing 57% of the total sales statewide. Utah County has 9% of the stores, or 4 of them, and they do 5% of the sales. Davis County, 5% of the stores. They've just got the 2 stores in Davis County, one in Bountiful, one in Layton. Dare you to find either one of them. They're doing 5% of the sales out of 5% of the stores. Weber County, 4 stores up there, 9% of the stores, 9% of the sales. And then Summit, and Summit's drive times look a little serpentine because of the highway nature of you know, this, you know, when you've got 80 and 40 crossing in there, you get drive times that look like this. But they're doing $22.5 million. They're doing 9% of the total sales out of 3 stores, including the walk-up store.
So unless you live in Colville or Camas, you're fairly well served.
Mm-hmm. St. George has 2 stores, and they're doing $8.5 million, or 3% of the total sales. This one was one of the ones that the legislature had in its sights to close, was one of the St. George stores. Quickly, we talked about flooding a market, having too much sales, so you bring in a new store and sales of both increase. St. George store, their Sunset Boulevard store in 2009 was doing about $6.5 million in sales on its own. They brought in a new store, built a new one. The sales of the old store dropped from $6.5 million to about $2 million. They went, "Oh my God, Chicken Little, the sky is falling." Yeah, except the other store was doing $6 million, so between them, they're doing $8.5 million. So now they've got 2 stores instead of 1, and they've gone up from $6 to $8.5 million annually, and they want to close the old store.
We met with the mayor, we met with the chief of police, we met with the head prosecutor down there. And the mayor made a comment. He said, we don't want you to close any of the stores. In fact, we'd like you to open another one out by the airport. Mm-hmm. And then he made a really interesting comment. He said when he was first elected about 18 years ago.
Now almost 20 years ago, yeah. When he was first elected as the mayor of St. George, and the time it was 18 years, the population, the LDS population of the city of St. George was upwards of 90%. Today it was 62. And we talked about who's buying. Are we buying more, or are more people buying? If we've got a demographic shift in St. George like that, that may be a tip to what is actually happening around here.
The other interesting thing is the likely impact was Mesquite. There are mm-hmm. probably fewer people driving to Mesquite to buy their beverages now than before. So leakage is one of the terms that would be used to describe that. So leakage has probably fallen off.
Some of these are not longer time specific, but or not longer timely. But we recommended open up the Cottonwood Heights store immediately. Don't have your number one store closed during your number one season. That seems pretty logical. We suggested they hire a DABC director because during the course of our study, they fired the director, deputy director, and chief financial officer for the DABC. Wasn't our fault, but timing was interesting. We suggested that they hire a DABC director with significant retail experience as opposed to another state bureaucrat. Any guesses on what they hired? State bureaucrat. I'm going to fly through some of these. Develop some franchise-type agreements for the package agencies to protect those guys. So the guy that had the store in American Fork got more than 90 days notice and had some protections before his store was his contract, his franchise was pulled from him. Give him a year. Give him a contract. Don't let the store drop in competition on top of you. And incentivize your franchisees, your licensees, your package agency operators to invest in their own stores. Work on employee training programs. Try to cut down on some of that high turnover. Some of it's salary, some of it's, you know, dead-end jobs. Use the real estate professionals that exist in this community and every other community in order to help you locate those stores so you don't do what they did in Bountiful. DFCM is really good at building and locating a Department of Workforce Services building. But locating a retail building, by their own admission, is not their strong point. We talked about consolidating the stores. We suggested, and I'll stop at this one. This is one that got the most buzz in the media when we made our final presentation. We recommended issuing an FRP, a request for proposal, to turn these three stores, to convert them from state-owned stores to package agencies, get them off state payroll, and effectively privatize them. The Avenues store and two in Park City. Give it a shot. Try it. See what it works. See if it works. See if it, with those franchise agreements, with those backstops, could it work? And could you take the off the state payroll and still maintain the money coming into the state coffers from the revenue?
And this concludes today's radio broadcast. Please join me in thanking our guests.